Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
There are days like today where I am just too busy to get outside and go feed myself. And that's where DoorDash comes in. It's super convenient and they bring the food to me. Also, I don't like paying delivery fees. So I have DashPass. DashPass is an exclusive membership from DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts, all for only $9.99 a month. DashPass actually pays for itself in two orders on average. DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today only on DoorDash and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply.
Doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing fine, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm going to go see Snap Judgment live tomorrow, so that's going to be fun.
Well, for those listening to this, that won't be tomorrow, though.
Oh, yeah. That'll be like 3 days ago or something.
Now people know we record very soon before we release.
Yeah. Glenn Washington is one of my inspirations for podcasting, so...
Yeah, I think back when we were talking, if it wasn't Joe Rogan, that's the show you brought up all the time with Snap Judgment.
Yeah. So our podcast is nothing like Snap Judgment. What are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Well, this is our Halloween episode. You know, when you do a Halloween episode, you want it to be related in some way. And so this case very much is.
The Scream Murder, September 22nd, 2006. Four friends, Brian Draper, Tori Adamczyk, Matt Beckham, they go over to Cassie Jo Stoddard's house to watch a movie. Halfway through the movie, Brian and Tori will leave, and then later that night, her boyfriend will leave, and then the power goes out, and Cassie will be murdered later that night. Now, typically, we look at the boyfriend or the last person to see the victim alive. So, boyfriend was Matt Beckham, and he left last. But this case isn't that simple.
Cassie Jo Stoddard was born December 21st, 1989 in Pocatello, Idaho. Lived mostly with her grandparents, but around September 22nd, she had been back living with her mom for a while. And her mom's boyfriend, as well as her younger brother named Andrew... She was the middle child. She did have an older sister, but she had moved out of the house. She loved music. She loved drawing. They said she was a very serious student, a straight A student, and she wasn't known to party or drink. And she had been dating her boyfriend, Matt Beckham, for 5 months. Now, the four friends get together the night of September 22nd, 2006, because Cassie is house-sitting for her uncle and her aunt. Her boyfriend has invited some of their classmates, and these are Brian Draper and Tori Adamczyk. So it's around 8:20 when the two boys arrived at the house where Cassie is house-sitting.
This was supposed to be more of a party, I guess, or a bigger get-together, but only the two show up.
Right. I think they were hoping for more people to show up, make a party of it, but it didn't happen. Things are sort of low-key. So the 16-year-olds take a tour of the house, and when they hit the weight room, they start lifting weights. Now, that's not something I would have done, but...
These are teens. They're weird.
After the weight room, they talk about what to do next, and they decide to watch a movie. And I believe it's Tori who chooses Kill Bill Volume 2 to watch. Sometime before 9:30 p.m., Brian either gets bored of the movie or he just doesn't want to be there anymore. He wants to leave. Maybe he wants to go see a movie at the theater. Matt asks Tori if he can stay at his house, which is strange because the original plan was he was going to stay with his girlfriend at this house, and he had gotten permission to do so. But now he's wanting to go and hang out with Tori at his house.
Matt wanted to hang out with the other guys that night.
Well, Matt needs to let his mom know that his plans are changing. So he calls her and says, hey, I want to go stay at Tori's tonight instead of staying with Cassie. Is that cool? But she says no to that. And she says because she has a surprise for him. So she's going to come by later to get him. So then he has to call Tori because Tori and Brian have already left. He calls Tori to let him know, hey, I'm not going to be able to hang out with you tonight. My mom's coming to get me.
Then sometime after 10 p.m., the power at the house goes out. And it's not storming. There's no real reason for it to go out. There's no wind or lightning or anything. So Matt and Cassie are a little freaked out by this. And the breaker box is in the basement, but... for some reason, they're too scared to go down there, right, Aaron?
Well, who would go to the basement? Imagine the power's out. I've seen enough horror movies to know if the power goes out, you don't go to the basement. In fact, I would probably go outside of the home. That's where I would probably go.
And their dog was even growling and going to the basement door and acting agitated. And I think at that point, Matt's thinking, somebody's in the house. He's freaked out.
The dog is very, very agitated, and it is definitely at the top of the stairs, and it's growling at the basement. Matt has a bad feeling about it. If you have a dog, don't you trust that dog to let you know if someone's around?
Now, I'm thinking if I'm Matt, I'd want to protect my girlfriend and stick around, but he ends up leaving.
Well, his mother picks him up sometime before 11:30. Well, the surprise was... that his dad is now out of rehab. So he was pretty excited to see him. And I'm guessing that this caused him to forget about the whole power going out. Now, in his defense, he did ask his mother if Cassie could go with them instead of leaving her at the house. This was on the phone, he asked. And she said no, because Cassie needed to watch the house, watch the dogs. Well, Cassie agreed. She said she couldn't leave the house.
And also the power came back on. So that kind of made them feel better. But still, it was a freaky situation before he left.
And perhaps they're thinking, well, the dog got freaked out by the power going out. And then the power comes back on and everything seems okay again. So between the power coming back on and his mom and dad showing up, I guess that sort of calmed the whole situation down.
Yeah, I could totally see that.
Cassie was house-sitting for her aunt and uncle, Frank and Allison Contreras. And Frank worked in Nevada. And so his wife and his kids went out to Nevada to spend time with him. Then they were all going to come back home. And they were going to come back home on Sunday. So Cassie had her friends over on that Friday. And then that Sunday, her aunt and uncle were returning with their family. And their daughter, Kelsey, entered the home first. Unfortunately, she finds quite a scene. First, she enters the home and finds some broken glass, which I guess she explains away somehow in her mind. But as she makes her way into the home, she ends up discovering the body of Cassie Stoddart.
There's blood all over the living room. The dog is locked in another room away from the scene.
Cassie's mom is Anna, and she had actually been living with her in recent times. because before she had spent a lot of time with her grandparents. There were some family issues going on, and Anna had become very concerned about her daughter. She couldn't reach Cassie all weekend. And finally, on Sunday, she had had enough. Now, she knew where her daughter was because it had been prearranged that she would be at her aunt and uncle's house. And so she headed that way. Well, when she got there, she tried to enter the home, and her boyfriend, who had gotten in there before her, realized what had happened and turned around and grabbed a hold of her and pushed her away from the scene. Frank needed help on the scene immediately. He told his wife to call 911. Now, Anna was taken outside by her boyfriend, Victor, and she is completely distraught. And her first thought is to grab her boyfriend's phone, and she dials Matt Beckham, her daughter's boyfriend. And when he picks up, she starts screaming at him, "What did you do to my daughter?"
An investigation ensues. They spend over an hour walking through the home. So they find different items in the home, but they're really focused on Matt because he was the last person to see her alive. In the house, they were not able to find any murder weapons or much physical evidence besides Cassie's body. And she had been stabbed repeatedly.
Yeah, she had been stabbed around 30 times.
The autopsy report will say that between 9 and 12 of those stab wounds were fatal, and she was stabbed in the neck, in the back, in the chest, and she had defensive wounds on her hands. One of her fingers was almost cut off.
Also in the home, they found drug paraphernalia, and through questioning, they discovered that the drug paraphernalia belonged to the homeowners. Well, Cassie's boyfriend, Matt, seems to be very cooperative with the investigators, and he's willing to do a polygraph, which Justin's spoken a number of times about polygraphs and how much he doesn't think they're even worth, you know, mentioning. But I would say for a 16-year-old kid, agreeing to a polygraph is either stupid or it's confidence. In other words, he wants to help the investigation. This was his girlfriend. If he's able to give them an entire timeline, who was at the house, what they were doing, when he left, what his plans were, how they changed. And he even talked about what happened after he left. He was with his mom and his dad, and they went back and started watching movies there. In fact, I believe they watched one movie and then started another and got a ways through that before he said he finally went to bed.
So he has a pretty airtight alibi if we take his parents' word for everything. But he does have phone calls from his cell phone saying, "Hey, I want to stay." Everything he's been talking about that night is adding up and is backed up by cell phone records.
He didn't have a car, so he needed to be driven places. He had to have someone take him here or there, so he has those witnesses as well.
Now, he has his own theory of who did this, right?
Well, he is questioned about his friends. His friends are Brian Draper and Tori Adamczyk. I would say that Tori Adamczyk is much more his friend than Brian Draper, but he's questioned about them. What do you know about these guys? And one of the things that comes up early is that he said that both Brian and Tori were very interested in his girlfriend, Cassie, and that both had flirted with her.
He goes on to pretty much suggest that he thinks these two guys might have come back. So just a mere few days later, investigators have pulled Brian and Tori in for questioning. And they initially talk about being there that night and then leaving to go watch a movie somewhere else. But then they say that they went to a gas station to buy some matches. What else is wrong with their story, Aaron?
Investigators take the approach of, we can clear you if we can talk to you. So especially with Tori's parents, the idea is, okay, so we'll give them the information and then they'll leave us alone.
And they're even present. Tori's parents are present for the interrogation. I think the officers, the investigators are doing this right. The parents are there, and as soon as they feel that things are turning, they say, "Hey, we want a lawyer." But for the most part, for the first hour and a half, they've been read their Miranda rights, and they're simply saying, please help us clear you.
The seriousness of the situation keeps escalating to the point where Tori's parents are starting to be very wary. And that's because their son is undergoing a change. He is looking ill. He's looking scared. He seems like there's something wrong. Shannon, his mother, is very open about this. She said that her son tried talking to her a few times and she didn't really want to hear what he had to say. She just kept reiterating that she believed he had nothing to do with it, just like he had originally claimed. You know, we'll get through this. We're taking whatever steps we can take. We want you to be okay. The police keep putting more and more pressure on. What Shannon doesn't know is that while she's debating whether or not to call a lawyer, investigators have already spoken with Brian Draper. And Brian Draper is starting to become more and more cooperative.
He pretty much gives him a full confession. He doesn't last long under the police interrogation tactics.
On September 27th, 2006, and again, this has been a day or two, they've been putting the pressure on these two guys. And I believe it's because even though they really took a look at Matt, his story seems to check out. They're not really getting anywhere with him. He seems like a great suspect. I mean, Justin said a number of times, it's the spouse, it's the boyfriend, it's, you know, that's who you look at. And I believe they really did look at him. But there's something about these two other guys who were hanging out there and then left. Their alibis are what are shaky. So they gave the alibi that they went and saw a horror film. They gave the name of the theater. And the investigators asked them, where did you park when you got there?
Because they wanted to confirm via security cameras if they could catch them on, you know, on camera so they could verify their whereabouts.
Right. And if they know they parked in a certain area, they can go to that theater and request if there is any security footage that might show them going that way. My guess is they didn't find that. Tori was very specific about where he parked his car. I believe he had a red Prism. They weren't able to verify that. Another thing that happened was they had asked him for his cell phone records, giving his dad credit. His dad did go and log onto the computer and recovered those records and handed them over.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements, I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better. Notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
But as they go through and try to check the alibis of these two, they're not working out. And that's when Tori's family especially is feeling the heat. there's a lot to worry here. They could lose their son. He might get put away for a long time. Court costs can be quite expensive. And so once they start feeling this heat where they know that they may just be headed that way, that's when they start moving on lawyers. It's at this time, this is September 27th, 2006. Brian Draper has confessed. The detectives are sent out. They're going everywhere Adam Chick could be. They're going to friends' houses. They're going to the parents' house. They're going everywhere you could imagine that he could be. They're trying to track him down. They're calling his parents. The parents are trying to stall because they need to talk to the lawyers. They already feel like they gave up too much. And they can tell from the way their son's behaving that he's been keeping something from them.
Yeah, and they're trying to ask the investigators, can he turn himself in tomorrow? But then they actually go in and give up before tomorrow ever comes.
Well, I think there are a number of things going on. One of which I think is, how does he look? If he's running, if he's not cooperating with investigators, it looks bad, right? And there's also the fact that detectives are telling them, look, if he doesn't turn himself in, we'll just arrest him. So they're trying to play this carefully. But the lawyers weren't much help. I think they spent more than a couple hundred dollars for a short consultation where basically they were told, yeah, we really can't do much at this point.
Well, he'd already talked to investigators. He'd already waived his Miranda rights.
But you know how it is. If you're spending money on lawyers, you want them to come up with a miracle pass, a Hail Mary throw, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And unfortunately, it's not happening. And it very much sounds like, well, let's see where you end up and then we'll work with what you have. It's not very promising. In fact, Shannon is on the phone with a detective. She's literally trying to get the lawyers to tell her what to do and they're not telling her anything. So she feels caught. And I think that's where the decision is made. We're just going to have to go to the station. She even tries to get them to go to the house because she had consulted with a lawyer on the phone who had told her the best thing is to have the detectives go to your home. Don't let your son go into the station. It's very intimidating. So she tried to get them to go, but the detectives by this point, they have a very good hand and they're not going to play by her rules and they're not going to give in to her requests.
With Brian's confession, they were able to track down the murder weapon, murder weapons, and other items.
Apparently what had happened, according to Brian, after the murder, they took everything to Black Rock Canyon and disposed of it there. And this included masks, included multiple knives, and other materials.
They also recovered a camera that had some very suspicious footage on it of the two boys at school approaching Cassie while she's at her locker. Then later on, there's footage of them in a classroom talking about and planning a murder and apologizing to Cassie's family, saying, sorry, it just has to be this way. Then later, there's footage of them on their way to the house talking about how they're about to get away with murder, pretty much talking about their plans and how infamous they're going to be afterwards. And then the final footage on the tape is directly after the murder, where they're bragging and congratulating each other on how they stabbed Cassie to death. They also find a book of matches and a burned note that had some contingency plans on it. Right, Aaron?
Right. The note was partially burned, so you can't read the entire thing. But what is legible is sort of a list of possibilities. So if they were to go to the house and Cassie and her boyfriend were there, then they would kill him first. And then if it was just her, they would do this. And it was a list of different possibilities. No matter what the situation was, they had a plan, which I would say shows some planning, right, Justin?
That's called premeditation, if there ever was.
Yeah, I don't think it gets any clearer than that. But one of the disturbing things on the tape as well is that Tori says that he is getting horny just thinking about what they're going to be doing. These two, Brian and Tori, started hanging out about 6 weeks before this happened.
Which isn't a very long time, but they seem to hit it off pretty well.
And the reason they hit it off is they had some, how should we put it, similar interests and similar viewpoints. What was learned about Brian was that he had a fascination with the Columbine school shooting. And Tori had a fascination with the Scream franchise.
They both admired serial killers. Some of the things they brag about are how Ted Bundy didn't know what he was doing and how they're going to make him and others look like amateurs, which in retrospect, not even close.
They also talk on the tape about why they chose Cassie. And they say that she's a really nice person, but that she has to die because people have to make sacrifices.
It's their friend, but it's the only person they know that they're going to have an opportunity to murder. So therefore, she's the target now. But prior to this, it seems that they actually had plans for other people. And all those plans didn't work out, whether it be they couldn't get their target alone or they couldn't make plans with them. But there were prior situations where they had actually planned other hits, other murders, but they never worked out.
In fact, on the tape, they say our first victim is Cassie Jo Stoddart. By saying that, I think that's pretty clear that this is just the start.
Yeah, they're implying that there's going to be many more. And if they're comparing themselves to serial killers, especially Ted Bundy, who had ungodly amount of victims, they're planning a large body count.
Brian had given up everything, but maybe not everything, because when he was talking to the detectives, he was trying to imply that his friend Tori is the one who committed the murder. And that he didn't actually stab her.
That's funny, because I think Tori pretty much says the same thing, right?
Tori has the same story in a way, except Tori doesn't want to admit to anything. Tori is taking the approach of, well, I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know that he was actually going to kill her. And Brian was telling detectives that he had not stabbed Cassie, that it was all Tori. The detectives didn't buy it. They kept pushing him, and they even said, hey, isn't it possible? Did he tell you to stab her? And finally, Brian says, yes, he wanted me to make sure she was dead. So I stabbed her 3 or 4 times.
And if we refer back to the videotape, which you can find on YouTube, it's pretty disgusting to watch. It's Brian on the video saying, I stabbed her in the throat and watched her disappear. So Brian's not getting away with his exclusion from this murder. And Tori's pretty much saying, we were filming a movie and I didn't know what was going to happen next. This was all for fun. Yet prior to this, they'd gone out and bought some knives, correct?
Yeah, Tori had a friend named Joe, and Joe testified that he bought 4 knives for these two, for Brian and for Tori. I guess it was about $45. He said that Brian paid for most of it, and then Tori gave him $5. Of the knives, one had a serrated blade, and the other 3 were not serrated. One of them looked very much like a dagger.
They look like really mean, brutal-looking knives. I guess if you're trying to make a movie, then you want a real mean-looking knife. But they're sharpened knives. I mean, you could buy some prop knives or other knives that are fantastical that would look good on camera. These knives look like they have one purpose, to stab or fillet.
But his testimony doesn't really end there. In fact, I think maybe the most important thing he says after he shows that he had provided the knives is he says that Brian quickly took hold of that serrated knife for himself.
Now, if we go back to Cassie's autopsy, she had multiple knife wounds. And the prosecution will say that many of those knife wounds were made with the serrated knife or a serrated knife, and a few of them were made with a straight edge knife. Looking at the wounds, all I would say is they are different sizes. I come to the conclusion that two different knives were used. I won't say if one was serrated or not, but it appears that two different ones.
The defense did their own testing. They were hoping to prove that the serrated knife would mimic the non-serrated knife if it was only partially stabbed into the victim. So they were trying to show that the serrated knife was the only one used in the crime. So getting into the trial here, this is the debate that Brian committed the murder and that Tori didn't know that he was going to commit a murder, that he thought he was part of a movie. They tried saying that if you take that serrated knife and don't plunge it all the way in, that some of the wounds will look like they were made with a non-serrated knife. But they didn't actually use the knives that were recovered at Black Rock Canyon. And that's a real point of contention, I think, because they had access to that evidence and they chose not to use it. So how much stock do you put in that if they're not using the actual knives? With Brian's confession, I mean, what kind of a case does he expect to have?
Yeah, that's the thing is he confessed. Not only does he confess, which, you know, we know that people can confess to things they didn't do, but he tells them where the murder weapons and these scary masks are way up in this canyon. I mean, how did he know that those items were there? They're on camera bragging about the murder afterwards. So apparently Tori was cool with it then, even if he thought it was all a joke or a movie up until that point. He was sure into it after the fact. I'm having a lot of problems here with this defense, but that's what a defense is for, is to try to poke holes anywhere there are in the prosecution's theory.
Well, Brian Draper's nailed here. There's no way to escape his fate, and DNA testing shows that he was involved. Now, of course, for Tori, he maintained that he had nothing to do with it, that he was there, but then he didn't know that his friend was going to be murdered. It's the release of that videotape. The videotape made it out where people could just watch it prior to the trial. And so everyone got to see these two boys bragging about murdering this poor girl.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, passes the savings on to you, and Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices. Along with premium fabrics and finishes, how can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
Of course, the defense says this should have been inadmissible. This should have been suppressed. Their clients were already convicted in the court of public opinion. They wanted to move the trial. There's no way they could get a fair trial. Da 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 da. I agree with their logic there, but if you videotape yourself bragging after you commit a crime, that's on you. Maybe you shouldn't videotape yourself doing that kind of stuff.
Tori's family, they're behind him 100%. And his mother wrote a book titled The Guilty Innocent. I don't know what to say about this. Having read the book, it's really obvious that if you're a family member, it's very difficult to see someone objectively, especially if you're a mother, because you love your child and you have your own perception of your child. But my guess is that denial is not just a river in Egypt. I mean, if you think about all the stuff that he said, the way that this murder was planned, and then the fact that after the trials, they're sharing a vehicle that's taking them to the Idaho State Correction Institution near Boise, they're just chatting away. They're getting along just fine. And this is not, despite the trials where it looked like they were trying to pin this on each other, they're back to just being buddies because that's their nature. This is what they wanted, and they got it. The only thing they were really upset about was that they got caught.
So it goes without saying, the trials do not go very well for either one of them, and they are charged with first-degree murder and found guilty. Now, being that they're minors, this is a little bit of a gray situation for judges and prosecutors to go after, but they're able to charge them as adults and get the sentence that they wanted. They were convicted of first-degree murder, and they received a mandatory sentence of life without the possibility of parole, and then 30 years to life for a conspiracy to commit murder also. So they hit them with both. They get life without the possibility of parole and a conspiracy charge on top of that. So they're never seeing the light of day, ever. Tory's family has a problem with this. Well, a lot of people have a problem with this when you sentence any minor to life without the possibility of parole. We've talked about it on our firefighter case. There's different aspects to every case where is this the right sentencing? So Tory's family has been appealing this. And some of the appeals are, I don't know if I could say interesting, but the first point they make is there wasn't enough evidence to convict Tory. Some of the evidence that they point to is the prosecution or the state didn't prove which knife wounds were from who, meaning they could have all come from Brian, and or at least the fatal ones, the 9 to 12 fatal knife wounds. They could not tie any of those to Tory. They also said that because his father was in the interrogation room and actually would ask his son to answer the questions or would repeat the questions to the investigators, and when Tory answered his father was acting as an agent of the state, and therefore anything he was telling his father should be considered inadmissible. Of course, they find the videotape that was out in the public totally prejudicial, and that should not have been used in trial at all. They also point out that the jury must unanimously agree to the way she was killed and the method. And finally, they took issue with the fact that the defense actually didn't call enough character witnesses to testify for the accused. So I'm going to give some thoughts here, Aaron. What do you think about the lack of character witnesses they called in?
Yeah, this sounds like desperation. It sounds like they're just throwing stuff at the wall to me, because the amount of evidence against him is overwhelming.
I mean, would you have thought anything different if you found out he was a great football player on the football team, had straight A's, and he was just a good kid that would help the grandma cross the street or help carry her groceries in from, you know, the car? Would that have changed your mind about this kid?
Right. No amount of goodwill will help you if you've murdered somebody.
As far as the jury agreeing on the method that Cassie was murdered, the judge says the jury doesn't have to agree on any of the details during the trial. They only need to agree on guilt or innocence.
Now, I think it's fair, because sometimes you can't know all of the facts. And in this case, the prosecution has shown that two knives were used. The defense has tried to show that one knife was used. But again, you can come back to that video recording where after the murder, you have Brian talking about how he saw her life slip away right in front of him. And then Tory is saying, we have to get our stories straight. Does that sound like someone who was suddenly shocked to see that his friend murdered another friend? No, it sounds like, let's cover our asses right now.
The judge will go on to say that it doesn't matter if the prosecution proved whose fatal knife wounds came from who. The fact that you were there is enough evidence alone. This is a sticky situation here. I do agree that they were both involved. I do agree that it wouldn't have mattered all that much, but the defense is trying to go for the, well, who inflicted the fatal blow And if it wasn't my client, then therefore he should not be convicted. Now, I think back to the case we covered, the Elkhart 4 case, where the high school kids had broken into a man's house and the homeowner shot one of the kids dead. The rest of the teens were charged with felony murder. So they went into a man's house under the pretense of we're going to steal things, not we're going to murder anyone. One of them's killed, and then the rest of them are charged with the murder of their friend when really it was a homeowner defending himself. Those kids were all charged, and their intention was not to go do, at least according to them, their intention was not to do harm to anybody, but just to steal stuff. Kind of compare and contrast that case with this one. Yeah, I stopped caring about whether or not this kid actually stabbed her or not. It doesn't matter to me. What do you think, Aaron?
Well, I mean, that's how it goes in the court system. You can't claim that you weren't the one that delivered the fatal blow. If you're there and you're aiding and abetting the person that did kill the person, you're just as guilty. And this is something that was told to the Adam chicks over and over. I don't understand how they can't get that. You know what I mean? How many times do you have to be told something for it to sink in? They maintain that, I think their out is that Tori felt concerned that Draper might hurt him, might kill him or harm one of his family members. So he had to sort of play along to survive. But what happened when he was with the police? He can't tell the police then? He can't come clean?
No, he says that he had nothing to do with it. And then he changes his story. I mean, there's it just all over the place. If he had a fear of this person, you would think that he would immediately say, yeah, I was kidnapped and this guy was murdering people with me along with him. But no, that's not what he says. And as far as his father acting as an agent of the state during the interrogation, we get mad when the parents are not present when minors are interviewed. We get mad when police don't offer the phone call. These investigators, you can read the transcripts, they say, we recommend that you contact a lawyer. We recommend that you get legal representation. They say it a couple times. The investigators did it right. I applaud them. They allowed the parents to be involved. They told them you should call a lawyer. And this still played out the way it did. So there's other points on the appeal that they go through, but these were the ones that just kind of stuck out to me as some of the most absurd. The final one is you can't sentence a minor to life without the possibility of parole. And I somewhat agree with that on paper. Just if you said, can you sentence a minor without the possibility of parole? I'd say that's a bad idea because minors are not developed. Their brains are not developed. They're a little immature. They know not what they do. But seeing these two guys, seeing them on video, this isn't the case that I'm going to make that argument for. Not by a long shot.
You know, when it comes to these kinds of decisions, sometimes you can't make them because of one case. You have to make them for most of the cases. And how many times does it happen where these murders are so malicious, as this one was, where you say, no, sentence them all to life without any possibility of parole. That's just, they've earned it. And my concern isn't so much for these two, but for other minors. Because when it comes down to it, I would like to see that people have a possibility of parole. Who knows? Maybe we could get Tori to come clean. I mean, I know why should we have to work for that? But in the end, I think it's better if we're working towards a more idealized situation where we have people who are working towards bettering themselves. And when they have no hope, we still have a prison system filled with people. Tori Adamczyk, as part of his, I guess you could say, defense, is that he said, if you just watch that video that was released of what they were saying before and after the murder, he said, if there had been no murder, it would literally be a joke. I mean, if you can't tell, I'm disgusted by this guy. And I'm sure some of you will think, oh, you're on your high horse. No, he murdered somebody. And he's making light of it. He's saying, oh, if no one had been murdered, this would all just be a joke. I don't find it funny. There was too much planning involved here. And they recorded some of it. They wrote some of it down. They bought real knives to really kill. And so when Tori is asking, you know, cry me a river because boo hoo, I'm locked up and my life's being destroyed. I only made a mistake. I shouldn't have to pay with the rest of my life. Well, I'm sorry, but you put yourself in that position. So while on one hand, I think there should be a possibility of parole, like Justin, I don't know how much I want to fight for him individually because he's never, not once, taken any responsibility for anything he said or did. And he keeps trying to pin it all on his former buddy. This is a guy that's not come to terms yet with what he did. On the other hand, Brian is out there saying, yeah, I did it. But I still don't feel like he's getting reformed either. I think he's just living with the choices he had made. He made the choice to give up the site where he had disposed of these items, the knives, the gloves, the masks. And I don't feel like he's on the right path either, if that makes any sense. And there are interviews with Brian Draper out there. I think if you look at the way both of these guys handled things, you could say they're just immature. Sure, you could say that. But all the planning and the execution that went into this crime, it's too much. And I don't think any amount of character witnesses or any other issues they might bring up to try and mitigate what happened works. I think they're dealing with a situation where they thought they were better than they were. They thought they were smarter. They thought they were going to be better than Ted Bundy at killing. They killed this poor girl who was at the house by herself. And now they want to get out. They want to appeal. They want to use this Supreme Court decision to reduce their sentences. But I don't know how many people will really support this because this was done for the thrill of it. I mean, one of the things I was looking at in this case is why would Brian do this? And this is the guy that, I mean, out of the two, I think he was really into Cassie. I mean, he said it himself. He said that was one of the things that got him set on this course was that he let her know he was interested, but she wasn't interested in him. And he felt like he was disenfranchised. He was shut out. He wasn't accepted. And I think this is his revenge. That's why it gave him so much joy. It gave this revenge that he took was against the world for what he's gone through because he's not accepted. And it's the same thing you'll hear from people who commit crimes like Columbine. They act like, oh, well, we're going to go out with a bang. We're going to do something horrible. We're going to let the world know who I am because I matter.
And with all of them, all the videos, posts, journal entries, whatever they wrote, if the mass shooting or the murder or whatever heinous incident never happened, I guess we could laugh at all those videos and all those posts. But the fact of the matter is those are all precursors to their actions.
I know one thing. If you end up watching the movie Scream again, it will give you some sense of what poor Cassie Stoddart went through because this was their aim, was to terrify her. And it started with shutting the lights out. Justin, let's go through that night.
Well, right after they left, they hid outside the home, were probably contemplating whether or not they were going to kill Matt or have to kill Matt. But once Matt informed them, I'm leaving, my dad's out of rehab, I'm taking off, they knew that their plans for the night were solidified. So they've gained entry back into the house to shut off the breaker box.
They did that because when they had taken the tour of the house, I believe it was Brian went and unlocked one of the back doors.
So once Cassie's alone, they enter the home, shut the power off again, and they waited in the basement thinking Cassie would come down to turn the breaker back on. And when she didn't, they went upstairs and they slammed the door hard to announce their presence. Now you have two masked intruders carrying knives in a dark home, and they come at Cassie, the two of them, and they take turns. One stabs her while the other one holds her, and then they switch off. And she fights for her life, but two guys with knives, she didn't stand a chance.
And I think you can toss out the concerns of the defense when they say, well, they only had evidence of Brian underneath her fingernails. Well, let me assure you, if she's being stabbed to death, she's not going to be able to fight for very long. Just because she only had evidence of one under her fingernails doesn't mean anything to me.
So he says that he's inspired by the movie Scream. Man, I haven't seen that movie since I was in like high school myself. I don't remember liking it then. Maybe I need to go back. But I guess I never understood why people think that violent movies are the cause to violence in society. But when you have an idiot like this that's citing a movie for his actions, I guess that's the reason why, right?
Well, I think for people who aren't into those kinds of films, oftentimes they make for a good scapegoat. A lot of times we need to pin the blame on something, and it's easier to pin the blame on something that maybe we can remove rather than on a human being who's actually responsible for their own actions.
I guess I listened to some very questionable music and watch some of the most questionable violent films that have ever been created. I've never had a craving to cause violence or harm to others in my life. So I cringe when people want to blame video games, music, or movies for the violence in society, because I think I'm a prime example of somebody that's very adverse to violence. I was playing Postal in Grand Theft Auto before it was cool. I listened to really harsh music, and I watch Asian horror cinema, which is about as violent as you can get. The movie Scarface with Al Pacino is one of my all-time favorite movies, yet I'm not a cocaine drug lord who owns machine guns and is picking fights with Colombian drug lords. So yeah, I'm not influenced that way by the movie. But to me, it's that outlet. It's that fantasy. It's the pushing the envelope because it's not real and it's not influencing me in real life whatsoever.
To explain this, you have to go to the people. That's how you explain this. You don't need a movie. You don't need an album. You just need to go to the people. On the recording, they're talking about how it shouldn't be illegal to murder anybody, because if you make it illegal, people will just want to do it more.
Yeah, murder's not a black market item.
But people can be obsessed with music or movies and not actually follow through on what was represented in those films or in that music. And I think in this case, when you're trying to figure out why it happened the way it did, I think it's that simple. I think there are people who describe themselves as being outsiders, which I know Justin and I have been, but they want to strike back at everybody because everybody's to blame for why they feel the way they do or why they're ostracized.
And society wants to blame other people for the horrors and heinous crimes in our society. And it's never pinned upon the individual.
So when it comes down to it, they have to accept responsibility. And even though I say there should be some parole somewhere down the road, 30 years, they got themselves in that situation. And if they have to work real hard for that 20 or 30 years to try and work their way back out, they better impress everybody.
I just think of all the opportunities that Tory had to stop what they were doing that night. And he didn't take a single one of them.
It was his car. When they shut off the breaker box the first time, when Matt left, when they shut off the breaker box again.
When Cassie didn't come downstairs.
He never chose to leave. And I believe we know the answer to why.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.